Hey, everybody, it's Kai. This is another installment of our podcast, Corner Office, which is named after the radio series of the same name, Conversations from the Corner Office. I'm going to take a second before we get into this next one and ask that you hit the subscribe button on this podcast. And if you have already done that, first of all, thank you. But second of all, leave us a review on iTunes. It's a big help to us. I really appreciate it. Let us know what you think. All right, so here you go, Corner Office.
We're expecting you. Won't you have a seat?
Ready to go to work?
For this interview, I had to get on a plane and go to the Hartsfield-Jackson Atlanta International Airport, yes, in Atlanta. Left the airport for a set of buildings right next to the runways because that is where Delta Airlines is headquartered. Went upstairs to a pretty nice-sized actual corner office.
Oh, yeah.
This one belonging to Ed Bastian. He's the CEO of Delta, a job he started just in May of this year. Before that, he was the company's chief financial officer.
Ed Kai Rosedahl, good to see you. How are you?
Good. How are
Thanks
you?
Thanks for making the time.
Walk around with your microphone.
It's Always good. Do. It's radio.
That's good.
The first thing I asked him, as a finance guy in an intensely operational industry, how it came to pass that he got this job.
You know, I think one of the core competencies in the airline industry is your analytical capabilities. And certainly finance brings back and brings up a lot of analytical talent and skill sets, and I think that's what allowed me to get into a job that's as technically challenging as this one.
You say a core competency. Some would say, listen, we in the airline business count the pennies down to the decimal point, and we're figuring out revenue miles and all that jazz.
Yeah, it's a big operation we run. 200 million customers we serve a year. We got to watch every dollar we can find.
It should be said, as we get going here, that you quit this company at one point.
I did.
I don't want to say you walked out in a huff, but you had a disagreement.
I did.
Over how things were being run.
I did. Company was in a very different place. It was still reeling after the effects of 9/11.
Yeah, and this was 2004-ish.
2004.
Right?
Yeah. And I didn't think the company was making some smart decisions. There were a lot of tough decisions to be taken. Pay cuts. You know, we had pilots taking pay cuts up to 50%. Voluntarily pay cuts. These were not court imposed. This was before the company filed for bankruptcy. And given the size of the investments and the sacrifices the employees were making, I thought the company wasn't being as prudent as they needed to be with those sacrifices in terms of how they were reinvesting them.
It was characterized at the time as cuts that were being made to your workers in order to get low fares.
Exactly. And we're not a low-fare airline. That's not who we are. We can't turn around and become Southwest or JetBlue. We got to be Delta. We're global, and we have a broader product line that we needed to reinforce.
Talk about that product line for a minute. I mean, you're not a low cost airline. You're out there. You're this big giant legacy carrier.
Yeah. And at that time, we were actually trading at a discount. We were getting 10% less than the competition on fares.
Yeah.
And so we needed to invest back in product. And today, I'm happy to tell you, we get a 10% premium.
And it sounds like you're proud of it.
Very proud of it. Because, you know, consumers have choice. And when you sell 200 million tickets a year, which is what we do with consumers, all of whom have choice, and they willingly pay a 10% premium, that means you're doing a pretty darn good job. And I'm proud of the people doing that.
How does that come to pass when, and I'll acknowledge in asking the question, that you guys do well in customer satisfaction surveys and you are efficient and operations now are good. And yet people really hate airlines, man. I mean, airline traveling in this country is not something that people look forward to.
That's true. It's an experience that people want to pass through as compared to enjoy. But at the same time, you know, air travel has become the fabric of who we are as a society. I use my own personal illustration. When I was 25 years old, it was the first time I stepped foot on an airplane.
Yeah,
I'd already graduated college and was off doing stuff, and so how would I have ever known I've gotten here? Whereas today, my kids will turn around and get on a plane for a night or a weekend and not think anything of it. So it's changed how we not only our lifestyles, it's changed how we compete. It's changed us in terms of bringing us as a global company to many parts of the world that we would have never seen before.
And yet so much of what you do, right, you have to keep your customers happy, but you have no control over a huge part of it, right? Over the security experience, over the amount of time that people have to show up at the airport in advance, over the fact that the guy next to me is stealing my armrest, over the fact that I'm trapped in a tube flying through the air for 3.5 hours and you're out of my tapas plate by the time you get to me in row 34F. How do you run a business when you don't have control over so much of that stuff?
Well, we have more control than you would think. You know, certainly the airport experience, while TSA is a partner of ours, we've made some big inroads with TSA. In fact, the meltdown that people were anticipating TSA was going to have this summer didn't happen, because at least for us in our airports, we got very actively involved with staffing, provided them new innovation equipment to move people through the lines quicker, got everyone's attention, because consumers don't distinguish when they're going through TSA from the airline, from the government. It's all one experience. You know, we do a lot on our product line with our people to make certain our people are as cheerful and attentive to the needs of customers as they can. Our people are in the air all the time, so they know what it takes to keep people happy, and they do their very best.
You have said you don't like to keep an anxiety list, right? A thing that you know you're technically worried about all the time. That said, there's got to be something that keeps you up at night.
Well, there was something last week.
Yeah,
we had the technology outage. That was a challenge.
Well, so talk to me about that. How did it go? Did you get a call at 2:35 from your on-duty ops guy who said, "Ed,
we got a call early Monday morning that the data center was dark and there was no power, and as a result of that, we were going to have to implement a worldwide ground stop, which we had no choice because of safety. We needed to make certain that we didn't put any more planes into the sky. Fortunately, we were able to get the equipment back up relatively quickly, within a couple of hours. But at that point, the damage was done, because the ripple effect of all the cancellations on one of the busiest travel days of the year, Monday morning, peak summer schedule, we were booked full. We had no equipment to recover. And so it took us a couple days to get it back.
Who made the decision to stop flying? You?
No, our operations control center. They are empowered to make the decisions for safety. They did not check with me first. They made the call as they needed to.
You, at some point that day, sort of mid-morning-ish, as you were figuring out what was going on, you went to your control center and you shot a quick video.
Right.
In which you apologized. Mm-hmm. Was that your decision?
It was our decision, yeah. It was our team, our communication team, myself. We talked that we had to be out in front. We had to be very visible. We had to give people the information we had. We didn't have a lot of information at that point. We were still trying to figure out what the source of the outage was whether it was us, whether it was the power company. We didn't have a finite time frame over which we could bring everything back up, and we wanted to keep people posted.
It's fundamentally an infrastructure thing, right? I mean, forget the control towers and we need more runways in this country. There's a back-end infrastructure thing that now, at least in part thanks to the Delta issue, but also there's been Southwest and United, everybody's had them. Congress now is looking at the aviation infrastructure in this country. Are we going to pass the test?
I think we are. You know, the outage was unfortunate, and the reason why the outage occurred was that our redundant backup system. We have a full backup capabilities. There were problems in terms of how the redundancy system was wired, and that's been fixed. That's been configured. We've made the changes. We're back and running. And candidly, over the last 7 days, we're back where we've always been, right near the top of the charts in terms of operating performance following the outage.
Do you know specifically what happened, that your backups didn't kick in?
Yes, we do.
What happened?
We had a handful of operating devices and servers that weren't wired to the B source, the backup power source. Mm-hmm. When those apps did not turn on and those servers did not come on, the other systems that were working went looking for them, and when they didn't find anything, the entire system came to a crash. And so we had to reboot the entire system. And I don't know about you, but you know, I have challenges just rebooting my satellite TV when it goes out, much less 750 applications that are all intricately woven and tied together. You know, we got a great technology footprint. We are investing heavily in technology and infrastructure. We're investing this year almost $200 million in technology infrastructure alone.
You know, it's interesting. So you're investing with the TSA, you're investing in infrastructure, you're investing in new planes. There was a time, not all that long ago, when airlines writ large in this country didn't have the capacity to invest, right? I mean, the decade after 9/11 was essentially lost for you guys. There were bankruptcies all over the place. Mm-hmm. How did you get to the point where now you have the cash flow to invest that money?
Well, I think the most important thing we did, there were two things. First of all, consolidation has allowed the industry to have enough scale and size to invest. You know, we were back then 10 airlines, all of relatively equal size, competing against each other, and none of us had enough scale to invest for the future. And as a result, the entire system was not operating, and you know, employees were taking pay cuts, customer service was probably at an all-time low. So consolidation has certainly helped. But the other thing that's helped a lot is that we have focused on the right, focused on our customers, focused on putting tools and technology in place to improve the product experience for consumers. So consumers are voting for Delta and say, yeah, Delta, we were surprised you had the outage because your reliability is top-notch, and this was not who we were.
The flip side of the consolidation thing, though, is that I, as a traveling consumer now, have like 3.5 or 4 legacy airlines that I can go to.
Mm-hmm. And competition has never been stronger. Prices are down 10% over the last 2 years.
And yet still you're making money somehow.
We're making money because the investments that we've made in quality and improvement in terms of efficiency are paying in. Fuel prices have also helped.
Yeah. You know,
fuel prices have come down a fair bit over the last few years as well.
What is your, I imagine when you walk in the morning or when you wake up actually at home, you flip on your computer, there's a bunch of reports there mm-hmm. waiting for you. Warren Buffett famously can, you know, tell you which See's candy store sold the more walnut treats the night before. What are your metrics? What do you look at on that report that you get?
We look at our operational performance, our on-time rates, our completion rates, you know, what our baggage performance was the day prior, and what our bookings are, you know, what our load factors are. And you can get a pretty good sense for how the day's going to go.
You got a favorite metric? You got a thing?
Yeah, completion rate.
Which is what?
Performing perfectly. We do it better than anybody. We performed in 2016 to date 137 days in our mainline operation without a single cancellation. That's what I say, performing perfectly. Never been done before.
How do you, as the number two U.S. airline, right? Number two, actually, global airline, right?
Mm-hmm.
How do you get bigger then? I mean, consolidation, you bought Northwest, you know, you took care of that. How do you grow if you have to grow to have the scale to keep on competing?
Well, we're growing in the U.S. We're growing this year about 4% in the U.S. How we're growing is by bringing larger aircraft in. It's called upgauging in the industry, to use a term.
Upgauging
in terms of bringing. What we've done is we've taken out a lot of the small planes that consumers candidly do not like, you know, the small 50-seat regional jets, and bringing them onto the mainline. So 5 years ago, we used to have over 800 small regional jets, 50 seats or lower, in our system. That was half of the entire system. Today, that number is down to 400. It's half its size, and we've brought all of those customers up in terms of larger gauge equipment. That's an efficiency play because you can bring more people in more efficiently, and it's also allowed us to put that service on the Delta mainline with Delta employees serving it.
Do you have to grow? Do you need to grow?
I think we need to grow. I think any business that's not growing is in slow motion liquidation.
Grow, good phrase. Grow or die, then.
Yeah, I think so. In this business, we're such a large fixed cost and scale operator. We're also growing internationally. You know, we've got investments that we've made around the world in Mexico and Brazil and London and China. I think long term, the growth is going to be internationally, but currently today, it's domestic.
You want to be number one? You want to be the biggest?
We want to be the best.
Yeah, that's not the question. You want to be the biggest?
We want to be the best.
How closely do you keep an eye on and thus worry about what Wall Street is thinking and the investing public and the whole share price thing?
Investors are real important. They're the people that provide us the capital to do what we do. I tend not to watch the stock price, you know, day to day. It's maddening, and it would drive you to making decisions that candidly are not in the right long-term interest for those stakeholders and all the stakeholders. But it's important that we get our shareholders rewarded for what we do, and they continue to invest in Delta.
When you get ready for those quarterly conference calls with analysts, what's going through your mind? Because you're a finance guy, right? I mean, this is your bread and butter.
I am a finance guy, and I know the people well. I've been doing this for a long time. They're very focused on the short term. What's the next month going to look like? What's the next quarter going to look like? I want to make certain that I'm talking to all stakeholders, not just the analysts. I'm talking to our customers. I'm talking to our employees. I'm talking to our government officials about Delta is making the right investments for the long term. Yes, we're focused on delivering every single day. We've got to earn that trust, but making the right long-term investments and letting everybody know that this is a place that they can feel is a great long-term investment, not just an investment for the moment.
How do you manage, a literally global enterprise, because it's not like you can do the old Bill Hewlett, Walter Packard thing of getting up and walking around, right? Management by walking around. Are you an email guy? Are you a phone call guy? Do you text? What do you do?
I email a lot, text. I hear from all people. I hear from customers. I hear from employees. I hear from all sorts of people. And I try to respond and read as much of my own email as I can. You know, we run this business as a relatively small company. It's hard to believe a $40 billion company could be managed, but we're such a centralized network of decision makers. You know, you walk around this campus at 500 yards, you'll find probably, you know, 20 of the top, you know, decision makers in the business right here on the ground.
When you get on a Delta plane, do people know who you are?
Absolutely.
Do you make sure of that, or do they just know?
Well, when you say people, I'm talking about our employees.
Yeah, of course.
Absolutely. First place I stop every plane, I'm in the cockpit, spend 10, 15 minutes before flight with our pilots, and I'm in the galleys and agents out in the airport before I get on. You know, we need to keep the spirit and the motivation. For many of these employees, this will be the only opportunity they'll get a chance in their career, maybe, to spend 10 minutes with the CEO of the company. And I every opportunity that I take, I think, is a great honor for me to be with them.
How often do you ride in the back of the plane?
I try to do about half and half.
Do you really?
I really do. I think it's important that we do that.
I do. As a member of the flying public, I completely agree.
I do, and I encourage as many of our team members to do that. So we do fly up front. It's important to understand what the product up front is, but domestically, I try to do at least half my trips in the back.
What's your general thought of from row 34?
I think the quality is pretty darn good. You know, the reliability, the core service levels that we're providing, we've made a lot of changes in the main cabin. So, you know, we have premium economy, so we have added extra pitch and for a modest upsell. I think
for the non-flying public, that's the space between the seats and you pay more for it.
And it's good value. We're improving. We're doing pilots with the food that we serve, the snacks on board, and you're going to be seeing some changes coming out real quickly. And you know, we try to you know, one thing we've been doing a lot is adding a lot of in-flight entertainment. We've made in-flight entertainment free on Delta, so while you're on the journey, and we're also looking to actively upgrade our Wi-Fi systems.
Do you fly the competition at all?
I do.
What do you think of them? I won't ask you to name names, but what do you think?
I have healthy respect for everyone we compete with, but candidly, the Delta product is the best in the sky.
What's the best part of this job?
The people. The people. I mean, people love working for Delta. There's a spirit of the culture here that people just will do what it takes for us and for their customers, and I love being with the people. I really do.
What's the worst part of this job?
I haven't found it yet.
Oh, come on.
You know, I can tell you the system outage was the worst experience. Let me mention two things. You know, system outage obviously was terrible. And apologies to all of our customers that were affected, and our people did yeoman's work. The other terrible thing is that we had to go through very early in my tenure here the Brussels bombing incident, mm-hmm. and we lost customers that day. A number of our customers were killed as a result of that terrorist event, and that was really, really tough.
What is it about airlines for you as a manager and as an executive that is attractive? Because you've had other jobs at a high level.
The visibility is key. You know, whatever we do, we're on the front page, or we're out on the geopolitical spectrum. It doesn't matter what's going on in the world. Somehow the airlines seem to be impacted, as well as just the challenge to figure out a business model that has never been thought and figured out historically. You know, the airlines have not made their returns on capital.
Yeah.
The jury is still out as to whether the airlines are permanently fixed and can continue to sustain the level of margins and improvements, and the challenge to do that. I think it's a huge intellectual challenge as well as a physical challenge, because it takes a lot of hard work.
It is interesting to say, to hear you say rather, that the jury's still out on whether or not you guys have this figured out.
Yeah, I believe we have, but the public and the investors certainly haven't.
Let me get all Rumsfeldian on you here. What are your unknown unknowns? What are you know?
Well, I think the fact that our revenues are down, prices are down 10% over the last couple of years, has warranted, you know, investors to get a little nervous as to whether this was the industry has reached another peak in its cyclical history. And we know that this industry is characterized by a lot of peaks and a lot of falls. Until we can get our revenues back to a more positive plane and show that we can, bad pun, that we can actually maintain our unit revenue strength and price in increases in fuel prices compared to only reduced prices because fuel prices have come down. I think that's the question of sustainability for me. And secondly, the thing that for me is going to be really important is keeping, you know, the morale and the spirit of this company really, really high. And, you know, 10 years ago when we were doing, you know, things were tough, you know, it wasn't too hard to rally the troops. I mean, people could see the burning platform. When you're making now $6 billion, which we made this past year, keeping that same sense of urgency and drive moving forward is a different challenge.
What's it like to lead a company through bankruptcy? I mean, because you weren't the CEO, but you were the guy.
I was the chief restructuring guy, yeah, and I was the CFO at the time. It was hard. It was hard on because we had a lot of really tough decisions to make, and pensions and pay cuts and job losses. And it was a brutal experience having to deliver a series of bad news on the one hand. On the other hand, it gave us a chance to have what we have today. And, you know, sometimes in life you find yourself upside down and you have to make some tough choices to get back on your feet. The bankruptcy code gave us a chance to go it again, and we made the most of it, and people now are being rewarded. My favorite part of this job, you know, I mentioned the employee part. Yeah. My absolute favorite part of this job is profit sharing day. 15% of our profits go to our employees.
Right.
And on Valentine's Day, we distributed $1.5 billion to our employees. No company in history, forget airline, forget U.S., in history has ever distributed that level of profit participation to its frontline employees that we did that day. And the joy in their faces, it's life-changing money for a lot of people.
There's a question to be asked here about who your competition is. And you know, the easy answers are United and all the other legacy carriers. Who are you most worried about? What are you most worried about competition-wise?
Well, there's always a competitive set that you're worried about. Your focus, because I also tend to be paranoid about you know, competitive instinct. My instincts are I'm very competitive as an individual, and I'm always concerned about anyone that could be getting a head start on us. So where I focus most of my attention on the competitive landscape, it's really on the international scene, because I think long term, we have the opportunity to be the best global airline in the world. And that's what my sights are set on.
What's that going to take then?
That's going to take improving the quality of the product and the delivery of the product.
Is this
new equipment we're investing in, our international wide bodies, and you know, what the state-of-the-art Wi-Fi, you know, better amenities, particularly in our premium cabins, but also in our main cabin, and our people, you know, working in close concert with good partners on the ground. We're in the process of buying a big stake of Aeromexico. We've got Virgin is a big partner of ours, Richard Branson's airline, Virgin Atlantic. We're 49% owners in that airline, and so that our product's becoming more appealable to the local interest.
Back to the growth thing for a minute. Acquisitions clearly, and large partnerships.
We've been quite acquisitive, yeah.
I usually ask CEOs, you know, what's this company going to be like in 5 or 10 years? And you'll give me some stock answer about growth and product and all this. So what's the flying experience going to be? Not Delta, but us as a society and air travel. What's that going to be like in like 10 years?
I think it's going to continue to expand and grow. I think the question about supersonic travel, and I think that's pretty far out there because I don't think that can – I think that is in direct conflict with what consumers really want, which is the lowest price possible. With respect to travel. So I think you're going to continue to see a growing industry. You're going to see us improve the quality and the efficiency of who we are and what we do. And I think you're going to find a better product.
Are we going to figure out the security thing, do you think?
Well, when you say figure out, what do you mean by figure out?
Better. Are we going to...
In terms of moving through the process?
Yeah.
Absolutely. And we've already made it better. You know, this summer is actually been a pretty... We've had some scares in JFK over the weekend. Yeah. We had a kind of a crazy report of a shooter, which turned out to be not true. So everyone's on alert. But no, I think the security thing is going to get better. Absolutely,
this is going to be a little sideways, but roll with me. You guys were, I think, the first airline to do fun and amusing safety videos.
We were one of the first,
all right.
Sure.
But highest profile because you had that woman with the wagging finger.
Yeah.
I flew Delta out here yesterday. And I was surprised to see that there was a relatively serious and not fun safety video. Is that going away now, or what's the
deal? No, we like to rotate. You know, if you if you use the safety videos to demonstrate fun too often, I think it gets stale. And listen, the safety video is an important part of our product, and we want people to pay attention. And the reason we used some humor in it was we got some much better attention in terms of people paying it rather than just the standard what do you do in the case of an emergency that people have found boring. So we're going to mix it up and keep it current.
Is this a 12-hour day job, 18-hour day job?
I mean, no, it's 20. It's nonstop. I mean, you get rest and you get time away, but you know, with technology today, you're never that far away from your job. That's what I find.
You've been doing this since May, right? So it's 4 or 5 months. How do you tune out? How do you disconnect?
Through my family. I've got a 13-year-old daughter. And what her life is like is totally opposite what my day is like. It's actually quite refreshing because she doesn't care what I do. She really doesn't. She gets embarrassed when she gets on the plane and sees me on a safety video. she covers her head, which I tend to do too, by the way. I get embarrassed when I see myself there too. And she's refreshing to me.
I have a thing I do with CEOs every now and then. Some can do it, some can't. We'll see how you do. It's what is your job in 5 words or less? Go.
Taking care of our people.
Boom. Wow. That was really good.
Thank you.
And quick, too.
Yeah. It's easy.
Ed Bastian, thanks very much.
Thanks, Guy. Appreciate it.
All right, that's it for the Corner Office today. Thanks for listening. If you want even more from this interview, we've got some GIFs of that new security line they figured out on our website. That is marketplace.org. Also, yes, I said GIF. And a new episode of this podcast in a couple of weeks. Thanks a lot.